I want to thank you both for joining us today. And let me just start by asking, you're looking at, obviously, the pine beetle issue in the Black Hills, but you're looking at it from maybe a different angle or a different aspect that a lot of people might not think about, and that is the potential for all of the tree die-off we've seen to hurt the water quality in the Black Hills. Can you talk a little bit about what your study might entail? Dr. Stone, maybe we'll start with you.
Well, we've been looking or proposing to look at some of the water quality issues related to our current outbreak with the mountain pine beetle. So we've seen, as I go mountain biking through the hills up in Centennial and Somelius trails, I've noticed you see this pile of red pine needles that are on the floor. So when these pine needles fall down, there's a decomposition process that occurs. And so you start breaking down a lot of this organic carbonaceous material. And as that moves, we get a lot of thunderstorms and rain events that happen here in the Black Hills, and you start moving this material down within the watershed. And it turns out that watershed is this water supply for most of our Black Hills drinking water, whether it be surface water resources or groundwater resources. And so what we suspect is going to happen, and really nobody's been looking at, is you're going to have an increased loading of dissolved organic material that will come into the water treatment facilities that supply the water for the Black Hills. And this has been seen throughout a lot of the Rocky Mountain West, especially in Colorado, where they're seeing this for lodgepole pine and outbreaks that's happened down there. They're seeing slight increases of organic carbon, organic material, DOM, dissolved organic material, that are reaching the water treatment plants in these areas like Fraser, Winter Park, some of the Denver water supply areas and whatnot. And so that's problematic. As I teach in my physical chemical treatment class here at the School of Mines, we talk about disinfection. And as you have these organic materials that are in your water supplies, they react with chlorination, they react with ozonation, they react, I believe, with UV disinfection as well, in such a way that they can produce cancer-causing agents. Trihalomethanes. So you've got the different, halogenated compounds that are regulated by EPA in drinking water supplies, water resources. And so there are strict regulations that how much those compounds can be in the water. And so there's a concern. Are we going to see, with the massive die-off that we're seeing in the Black Hills and a lot of our upper watersheds, is that going to correlate with increased organic matter loading that's going to come down these reaches and either impact our groundwater and or surface water resources in our water supplies? We don't know. Nobody's been looking at this.
It is surprising when you drive up into the Black Hills, and certainly for folks who live here, just a huge amount of acreage of pine trees that have been gone and that have fallen over and they're dying up there. And I guess it would make sense that that would make a difference in the chemistry of the water. Could this potentially cost more for water treatment for a place like Rapid City, where we rely on some of the surface water and some of the groundwater that the surface water recharges as well?
It certainly could. You know, water takes a finite amount of energy to treat. Rapid City just recently commissioned a new drinking water treatment plant over in the Jackson Springs area. And that plant is a ultrafiltration plant. So it has really small pore sizes that could, but we don't know, effectively remove this dissolved material. But it's going to take additional energy. You might get biogrowth on those filters. Typically, what's done is there's a pretreatment step where you can coagulate, flocculate, add chemicals to the water in order to get those dissolved materials to coalesce or bind and perhaps be removed either through sedimentation or absorption processes in order to remove those. But that takes more energy, more chemicals, more everything in order to effectively remove that. And so if you look at it from a sustainability standpoint, let's say the net carbon footprint of a bottle of water, a gallon, a liter, or whatnot of water is going to increase. You've got all this embodied, let's say, energy that's associated with that impaired water that's going to have, it's going to cost more to come to your tap. And so we're going to pay for it from an economic standpoint, but also from a environmental standpoint with all the additional chemicals, the additional emissions, the additional energy that's required to do that. And that's something that has not been looked at, as far as we know, in this region or down in Colorado with their outbreak. And so that there's a reason for concern, and we're going to look to see if that is indeed something we should be concerned with.
So it sounds like there's still quite a few unknowns out there about what this pine beetle die-off could mean for our water quality. And Heidi Sieverding, you're also joining us here today. You're a research scientist working alongside Dr. Stone on these issues, on these questions.
Right now, I'm just doing the background research as to what we potentially could be looking into, because we don't know what the concentrations are going to be. They've done this research in the lodgepole pines in Colorado, but they're looking at a snowmelt system. We're looking at a rain-driven ecosystem and ponderosa pines. So we're really looking at a different ecological dynamic here. And it's not really something that we even know what to expect. We don't know for sure if this is even going to be a problem in Rapid City. We need to investigate it and find out.
Is this one of those things, I assume, even with a small concentration, could be an issue because these things can build up over time? And if you're talking about the thousands and thousands of gallons of water used every day in Rapid City, then even a little concentration can end up costing a lot to treat to the proper safety levels.
Yeah, trace amounts of organics are quite challenging. Typically with water treatment, the cleaner the water it is, the more difficult it is to treat it to drinking water standards. And these are typically going to be trace concentrations, trace dissolved organic material. So you might have some cloudiness with the water, but it isn't something that's going to settle out very easy. It's not turbidity, let's say, but it's just kind of like a dark tea-like water. And those are quite challenging to remove from a drinking water aspect. And so, this system is much different than what you're seeing in Colorado and Wyoming with the lodgepole pine systems. Lodgepole pines are typically, it's like a 10-year cycle or more before they get a lot of these, you get the leaves start or the needles start turning red, then they die off, they fall, and then they're standing dead for quite some time, and it could be up to 15 years before that system falls down, or for all that material falls down onto the soil. Here with ponderosa pines, everything is accelerated with this. So you're seeing as soon as they're infected, let's say around the Sturgis Rally, I think is when the beetles are flying normally in that time period, the water cycle or the water cutoff onto those trees stops within several weeks of being infected. And you'll start seeing some of the browning of the needles within 6 to 9 months or thereabouts starts falling off. You're going to get about 3 to 4 years, you're going to start seeing some topping. And so some of the tops of those trees are going to be falling down and everything's on the ground. As I saw just recently hiking up Harney Peak into the Black Elk Wilderness, pretty much everything is on the ground or laying on top of each other. And it's a huge slug or a huge mass of material that's moving off that's much faster than what you're seeing in the ecosystems down in the high Rockies.
Given the differences, is there any way you can sort of predict a worst-case scenario? What are we seeing down there? Are we seeing effects on aquatic life, for example, or stream quality in that sense? I don't want to say the sky is falling, but how bad could it get?
It has the potential to be pretty bad. I think increased sedimentation is an issue down in Colorado because a lot of their hydraulic systems are snowmelt, snowpack. And the snowpack itself is changing dramatically due to differences in evapotranspiration, wind-blown deposition, and whatnot in those infested or impacted areas in Colorado. Here, it's hard to say what it is. We do have some positive things, as there's some management strategies that we have seen in with the thinning and whatnot that's happening here in the Black Hills, that for lodgepole pines you can't do. You can't go out and just thin some of that area because of either terrain or just the lodgepole pines themselves aren't susceptible or able to be thinned because of their structure, whereas the ponderosa pines can be. And so there are some changes or some positive things that can be done. And so what if there are some different watersheds that we could look at up in, let's say, Rapid Creek that could be thinned or managed better? Perhaps some can stay alone, some could be thinned, some could be clear-cut, some could be whatever. Are those type of management strategies in the forest going to make any changes with our signatures of our organic material loading that can come down to the water treatment plant eventually through Pactola, down through the watershed or through the Madison and through the aquifer? Is that going to make a difference or not? And those are the things we want to investigate with our proposal ideas.
And you're looking to start this kind of research coming up here soon. What's the potential time frame for all of this, for the research potentially to start, and then when would you start to have some results?
Yeah, there's a preliminary project through the South Dakota Water Resources Institute over at South Dakota State University, and I received, it's a USGS 104B grant that's... They're sending it to nationals and getting it reviewed, but I suspect it will be funded because they've already down-selected those. And so ideally, we're going to have a graduate student at the School of Mines start this summer in cooperation with the USGSF office here in Rapid City to start understanding where should we sample, what type of things should we be looking for, what watershed should we be looking at, and perhaps what samples we should be taking. I know the USGS is very interested with this. Also, the U.S. Forest Service and especially their researchers down in Fort Collins are quite interested in this this work because it's an unknown. They don't know how ponderosa pine-dominated forests are going to react. How are they going to influence the water quality in these areas? And so this has some huge significance because you think of all the communities throughout the West that have ponderosa pine forests. You go down to Arizona, New Mexico, the Front Range of Colorado have different type of geologic settings as we do, also similar type of trees. And there's literally millions of people are using that water supply or using those water resources as a drinking water use.
Well, the effort to maintain clean drinking water is certainly something we want to keep following on this program, so we'll have to follow up on your research as it goes forward. Dr. Jim Stone with the School of Mines, thank you for joining us today. Heidi Sieverding, a research scientist also working on this project, thank you as well.